Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
10 seconds.
He rolls into it.
Wow, he might get it. Take it.
Way of the Warrior.
One of his legs could fight at welterweight, I'm sure.
Probably.
Roll mount, here's some ground, and pound by O'Gara.
I think the first 2 minutes were everything we thought it was going to be, and then after that, it was the surprise of the night.
If it happens in MMA, you hear about it here. Your MMA show, Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior. Eric Hulkrin, along with Ken Evans, covering everything in the world of mixed martial arts. We got an event this weekend, as we will talk later on in the show, to Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. He is taking on Rory McDonald for the presumptive Republican nomination. I'm kidding. The presumptive number one contender at 170 pounds.
How many superdelegates do they have at 170?
I don't know. I think Rory's going to be a little short. So
is this like the Democrats where it's real sketchy?
Yes. It's a real sketchy
process.
Who
gets nominated? All right.
Yes. And so we will talk to him a little bit later on. But before then, we're going to talk about... I think I might be coming around to Ken Evans' thought process if Mark Hunt doesn't stop talking about Brock Lesnar.
Yeah, it's interesting, too, because we obviously last week told you about Brock versus Mark Hunt. We talked a little bit about that, and we knew we would be talking more and more about it as we get closer to the fight. What I didn't think I would be talking about as often is Mark Hunt's smack talk, apparently, against Brock Lesnar. I mean, he has just been running his mouth, which is great. You want to do that, go ahead and do that. I do find it very interesting over the past week, this weird little turn of events that's taken, considering this USADA compliance and this exemption that's already written into the rules. A lot of people have kind of taken this and run with it. I saw the story last week. I read the story, didn't think anything of it. A lot of people, though, are really upset. And maybe this is the thing for me, too. I've never really thought Brock has been a guy that's been on steroids. So I look at this and go, oh, yeah, he's going to have to get the exemption because he's only got a month until this fight. A lot of people are putting on their tinfoil hats and calling conspiracy theories for this after the story broke that Brock Lesnar gets one of the USADA exemptions for the four-month testing because he was retired. He had no plans to come back to MMA. And the way that things work now is if you're not under contract, you don't have a fight coming up, there's no reason somebody's going to test you. There's now out-of-competition testing for UFC fighters, but that's for UFC fighters. At no point was he a UFC fighter. So I looked at the story. Oh, yeah, that makes sense. They're going to have to give him the exemption because the fight's in a month. You can't do this fight if you don't give him the exemption. Right. And the reason you do this fight is because it's at 200. And the reason you want to fight Brock at 200, Mark Hunt, is because you make a lot more money doing this at 200 than anywhere else. So I didn't think it was a big story, but a lot of people, including Mark Hunt, have come out thinking that maybe this is for Brock to cycle off of steroids. I think a couple days ago, Mark Hunt even said Brock Lesnar is quote unquote juice to the gills, is what he said.
Yes.
As he's going to take him on at UFC 200. Do you think there's any legs to this? They wrote an exemption in to the statutes for the testing. This seems like the reason why. Well, if you got a, and I don't know if they ever thought a dude was going to come back on essentially 30 days notice, but if you got a guy coming back to fight and you want to do it in 90 days, you can't do 4 months of testing. You got a guy wanting to come back in 60 days, which some guys say is plenty long for a camp, especially Michael Bisping now. You can't do a fight with the 4 month regulation. So this was written in there for a reason. It just seemed like Brock was one of the most high profile guys to actually get granted that exemption. And a lot of people are kind of running after that and saying, hey, that's a thing that, you know, we should never do. I mean, do you disagree with the exemption if somebody's retired or not under contract?
I don't disagree with the exemption. And I guess the part of the story that I need a little clarity from you on is he's re-entering the testing pool, so he will be tested at some point.
Oh, he was tested the morning after this was announced.
Okay, so this is what I'm saying. Like, this is my problem with running with the story is, when I read the story, I had the same reaction you did. It's not like he's not going to be tested, and I understand that you're going to say, oh, well, he could be cycling off this or cycling off that. Even if that were true, it's not as if, because let's be honest, one of the reasons that Ariel Helwani was fired and then rehired was because of his ability to sniff out these stories. It's not as if in December of 2015 they're working on this deal.
Right.
Right? And if Brock knows in December of 2015 and Dana knows and Mark Romani knows and Vince McMahon knows and he's on something, then yeah, maybe you can put your tinfoil hat on. But it appears by all accounts that UFC 200 is booked. It's booked to be Conor McGregor and Nate Diaz, and that falls through, kids, in March.
Yes.
Right? So there is no to your point, there is no 4-month window for him to be tested in.
And the other thing too is there's no point in Brock Lesnar making any phone calls before WrestleMania, which is at the beginning of April, I believe, this year.
Correct.
Because Vince McMahon is not going to let him do anything before WrestleMania. He wants him on that card. He wants to make sure he's there. He's one of their big draws as well.
And so, you know, we're after WrestleMania, and it's
WrestleMania
in the South. I don't know why I just said it like that, but whatever. So now we're sometime in April, and they probably have this conversation. This conversation probably lasts for a month, and then they ink it, in the middle of May?
No, they inked it right before he made the announcement, so it's in June.
But, I mean, they're talking during this
break. Right, yeah, they're talking in May, and at no point does anybody go, oh, Brock needs to start getting tested, especially after we realize how pissy the UFC got about their surprise being spoiled.
Right.
At no point do they want to go, if this isn't even signed, do they want to go, hey, right, we need Brock Lesnar and USADA testing.
Hey, can you go to his house and test him?
Right.
But don't tell anyone why.
Everybody's going, what? Yeah, so this doesn't surprise me at all. I get Mark Hunt is selling this fight, and I love that he's selling this fight. I don't know if you want to piss Brock Lesnar off too much. Again, he's a guy that can handle himself in there, so maybe more power to him. But it's going to be interesting. Let's remember, Frank Mir, after beating Brock the first time, liked to talk a lot about Brock. And we saw what happened in that second match against Frank Mir. Brock did not take things well. Brock took all of Frank's strawberries and rubbed them all over his face.
He did.
And Frank Mir tried to shake his hand afterwards. Brock was not having any of it. And lo and behold, we become enamored with Brock Lesnar. He wins the heavyweight title. He defends it a couple times. He kind of moves along with the diverticulitis and takes those losses, and we thought we're done with him. But he's back now. This doesn't surprise me at all. Anybody who thinks the dude's on steroids, go take a look at some of those pictures. What's that one where he looks insane and he's in junior high?
Right.
I mean, there's not a lot of dudes on the planet like this, but he's going to be one of the dudes that's built like that. I mean, let's remember, he's one of the first super athletes that cuts to 265. There were guys cutting to 265, usually because they were fat and out of shape and they were too big for the division in other ways, not because they were cutting in the same way somebody would cut to 205 or 185 like Brock Lesnar did.
And to your point, let's understand, there are no photos that you have of Alistair Overeem where he looks like me. And then he's like a giant superhero, right? Like, there's a clear...
No, we have photos where he looks like you, and then he's a giant superhero.
There aren't any of Brock.
No.
Where Brock is like a tiny 100-pound child, except for when he's like 1 year old, right? And then he becomes this super... He's always been this giant monster of a human being that just developed into a fighter. And I always...
Let's remember, how long did Alistair fight at 205? He looks small in there with Chuck Liddell back in Pride.
Yes.
And, you know, at no point did Brock look like that. So I don't know if some people are just glomming onto the pro wrestling aspect of it, and a lot of pro wrestlers have been busted with steroids. I know a lot of people, you know, aren't sure exactly how it works, especially at that top tier level. There is a wellness program in place in the WWE now. That's been in place for a couple of years. They've made big strides towards that. A lot of guys have been suspended. Again, you can say, okay, maybe not at the top level. It doesn't happen. I don't know. But that is there and that is in place, and Brock's been part of whatever that is for the past couple of years. Brock's never been the guy that you've worried about that. He's never even come close. He's never tested dirty. He's never been one of the TRT guys. I just think a lot of people are latching onto this because he's a big dude, and some people think it's suspicious with the testing, but I think it's exactly what that exemption was written for in this case. Do you like, though, the build-up to the fight so far?
Yes. I don't know that it's necessary. I think when you put 200-300-pound men in an octagon, I think it sells itself. But, you know...
What about Chael Sonnen? He's saying if he's only been training for a month, he's going to get his ass kicked.
Well, everyone's saying that. Josh Barnett said, I don't see a difference with it. Ken Shamrock said he needs more consistency. You know, like, I don't see...
wait,
right, I'm with you.
What?
Yeah, right.
Ken Shamrock?
But what I'm saying is... You don't have a lot of guys who are like, other than Mark Hunt, who's yelling about the steroids, there aren't very many people, save for yourself, that are going, oh, this is going to be terrible for Mark Hunt. And
I'm not saying it's going to be terrible for Mark Hunt. I just think it's interesting people are writing off Brock Lesnar so easily. It's not like in this month he was going to all of a sudden have hands. That's not what was going to happen. So I don't know what people are expecting from Brock that he would have in 6 weeks versus 4 weeks, in 8 weeks versus 4 weeks. Sure, you get more time in there. Sure, you kind of get to work on some of your timing more. But, I mean, he wasn't going to drastically change his delivery system, so to speak, in a fight. His delivery system is going to be to try to take down and ground and pound, and that doesn't change for Mark Hunt. He's not going to go try to outstrike a K-1 boxer. That's not going to happen. So he's going to go in there and do what he does, and, you know, for him, he's going to basically sharpen the skills he's known all his life in these 4 weeks leading up to the fight.
And so we've got
in
that,
Canada.
Yes, in Canada, which is weird. That's where he's going to hail from. He's going to hail from Saskatoon as opposed to the United States.
Look, I get the farm life. If you want to be out in the middle of nowhere and you don't like people around and you want to kind of show appreciation for that, cool. I'm just wondering where that appreciation was when they almost killed him the first time he had diverticulitis because he got stuck in their healthcare system.
And that was in his book where he was like, I needed to get out of here because they were going to kill me because they didn't have anything for me. So, yeah, it is very interesting to see that he's coming from Saskatoon this time around.
Yeah, if you look at the Reebok kit, it's got the maple leaf on. And again, we love our Canadian brethren, but this was kind of strange.
It was kind of strange. And then Brendan Schaub, another guy who was yelling about how furious he is about the exemption and testing. So I guess we'll have to see. But the one part of the story that's not getting told that I wanted to make sure that we at least brought up is that it doesn't mean he doesn't get tested. It just meant he hasn't been tested for 4 months leading up to this fight.
And he was literally tested the day after he announced the fight. They showed up at his door, whatever time in the morning it happened, and said, hey, we need your blood. So, I mean, they're on it. They're testing him. Again, I don't know a lot about steroids. Brock Lesnar's been one of those dudes, though. As big and strong as he is, it's never even really entered my mind that he'd be one of those guys. Because, again, like you said, physically, you've seen a very natural progression. It wasn't the Alistair Overeem Captain America serum while he was in Japan and he starts eating horses and he looks like he should be wearing neon and spandex.
Right, right.
Which, you know, is ridiculous. If you look at Brock Lesnar as a kid and as he went through his collegiate career, I mean, you never see any of those signs. You know, you're from Chicago, Sammy Sosa.
Yes. No, you don't see. You didn't. There were no Sammy
kind of
Sosas.
Kind of a wiry dude. He played ball fast and, you know, He had a couple summers where he just seemed to balloon up. Like, that never happened. So I guess in my mind, I've never really suspected Brock Lesnar, so maybe that's why I haven't really thought that there were a whole lot of legs to this story. But it seems to be a lot of the discussion as we lead up to the fight. We're talking more about Brock Lesnar and steroids than we are the championship fight in that card. One of the championship fights, I should say. The real championship fight, which is the Daniel Cormier-John Jones fight. Which I find very interesting considering the two dudes involved in that main event. And this tells you, for anybody that wonders why they hired Brock, I think that contingent is smaller and smaller on a daily basis. It's because he takes the air out of the room for everything. And yes, sometimes that affects your own card, but that also affects sometimes, well, no NASCAR coverage on ESPN today because we're going to talk about Brock. Oh, we're not going to talk so much about the Copa Americana because we're going to talk about Brock. So you want that dude on your card because he's sucking air out of other coverage.
Well, and you want that dude on your card because for a guy like, you know, Daniel Cormier, got to hang out with Brock a little bit. If Brock can rub any of that off to a guy like Daniel Cormier, who has not been a really big draw as a champion, right? Like, there aren't people pining to give $60 to watch Daniel Cormier fight. Like, when you put guys like that on the card, when you put Brock Lesnar on the card, when you put Chael Sonnen on the card, when you put Conor McGregor on a card, you naturally elevate the rest of the sport to this sports entertainment level that it really needs to be if you want it to appeal to a mass audience. You know, when you're selling violence predominantly, there needs to be a bit of spectacle to it.
Mm-hmm.
Because there aren't a lot of people that are going to just tune in on their first time and understand the nuance of guard in Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
No,
right? It has to be a spectacle.
I mean, Floyd Mayweather realized that a long time ago. He put the sizzle on top of shoulder rolls and made a career out of it.
Right.
Who looks at Floyd Mayweather's fights and goes, man, I want to pay $70 for that? Nobody. Nobody looks at his fights and says that, but we look at everything around the fight and the buildup and the record and the undefeated and the talking and the money and the pretty boy and all of that stuff. That's what you look at. So, I mean, that's why the UFC has put Brock on the card. So it'll be interesting. I know that Josh Barnett is out there. He wanted that fight really bad, I know.
Yes.
But that, I want to say, Mark Hunt is a legit opponent. Josh Barnett would have been a terrible choice if you've only got a month to train, because Josh can probably negate a decent amount of what would be Brock's strength in a way that Mark Hunt couldn't do it. So I understand why he's mad about it. A lot of guys in the business want to get really upset when some guys get opportunities that they fear, quote, unfair. But, You know, this is the same deal that he's got in WWE. He's got the Brock Lesnar deal. He's got the Brock Lesnar deal there. He's got the Brock Lesnar deal in UFC. When you command the eyeballs, you command the money. And it doesn't, quote unquote, end up being fair for everybody. But that's business, and that's how business works. And as he put it, it's billionaire business when it comes to Brock Lesnar.
Well, and the other big story this week that I want to jump into, and it's a bit of speculation, but from a real deal source, is that Fedor made an appearance on the MMA Hour yesterday with Ariel Helwani. And
they're recently reinstated. Yes. Ariel Helwani.
Yes.
How much crying was on this week's show?
I didn't watch it because it just, right. There wasn't crying. So
it's funny because he's back. That's why it's funny. Don't get mad about it.
The long and short of it is Fedor says he's much closer to the UFC deal than he's ever been before. And they're just making sure that it's going to be right for both parties. You interested in this?
Sure. Oh, of course I'm interested.
Do you think it's true?
Yeah, because, I mean, his face has been all over. Do you still have Fight Pass or not?
Yeah.
Because I got rid of it for a while, so I wasn't sure if you
how
you
dare
did that
you,
too.
Sir.
When, do you use Fight Pass every week?
I use it every day. It's how I wake up in the morning.
Of course you do. Yeah. Make sure that $9.99 is worth it. There have been a lot of notifications, a lot of ads, a lot of emails about you. Is it UFN or EFN?
EFN.
Whatever it is. It's Fedor Friday. It's basically what it is.
Yes.
I don't need to know the fighting promotion.
Is that the hashtag they're using?
I don't know.
Okay.
They'll be bankrupt on Saturday. But on Friday night, we get to watch Fedor. And there have been a lot of ads for that, and a lot of the UFC promotional machine has done that recently. So that's going to air on Fight Pass on Friday. After that, Fedor's a free agent, and he says he's ready to speak with any and all organizations. I think you talk seriously to UFC because that's the organization that's going to be able to set up a big fight. Now, what is the big fight? Do you bring Randy back? I know he's tangentially associated with Bellator at this point. They fought before, but they've gotten back together before. You know, maybe the UFC and Randy, they'll come together. You'll sleep with the ex another time. Do you make the Brock Fedor fight?
Just one more time.
Exactly. Just one more time. You're a little drunk.
Just to make sure.
But everybody's going to make a lot of money. That's the I was a little bit drunk of the business world. Do you say, hey, you know what? I want to sign Fedor, and in 6 months, Brock gets to come back, and we do this for New Year's Eve. Maybe Brock's a two-time-a-year deal, and he's not in WWE enough to where that would be prohibitive. I mean, he's essentially on 3 to 4 pay-per-views a year, and he does dates to promote those. That wouldn't preclude easily a 4-week camp. If Brock wanted to adjust to a 6 or 8 week camp, probably wouldn't preclude that. Brock on New Year's Eve and Brock on July 4th every year. I mean, that's an easy thing that they could do. So do you do Brock and Fedor? A lot of people are clamoring for that at this point, because even if Brock loses to Mark Hunt, you still want to see Brock Lesnar fight. If Brock wins against Mark Hunt, you really want to see, well, what's he still got? And, oh, Fedor, he's one of the most dominant heavyweights of all time. What's he got left? Can he beat Brock, who's just a quote-unquote pro wrestler? You know, somebody in Japan salivating at the thought of that fight.
Well, right, yes, for sure. And I think that's, you know, that's where I would put it is...
In Japan?
Yeah. Get 91,000 people to watch that fight? Absolutely. The other bit of news this week, Michael Bisping's been running his mouth and saying some interesting things. He's trying to make Ken Evans' Christmas come true. He's very interested in the Dan Henderson fight. Mm-hmm. He's also interested in a GSP fight.
Really?
Yes.
I know you had talked about that briefly. I hadn't heard too much about that. Let's go through what he has said already. First thing that some people seem to be upset about, he's basically written off Luke Rockhold and says, all the pull I have as a champ, I'm not giving Luke Rockhold a rematch. He doesn't deserve a rematch after the fight we had. Do you agree with that?
Yes, because I would love that to be eliminated from our vocabulary. I would love it if we could move
if past, at some point we can get rid of the instant rematch.
For no reason instant rematch, yes. Because I really feel that we are just... in the process of anytime two guys fight and there's a belt on the line, that other guy gets an instant shot regardless of what happens.
Like, should the champ get an instant shot back?
Well, I think that's contractually different, I think.
The UFC's never done that, but they've given their champions essentially rematches anytime they lose as an opportunity. Now, let's realize here, Luke Rockhold never defended that belt. He won the belt. He's the rightful champ, but he never defended the belt. He loses it in terrible fashion in the cage in the first round against a guy who wasn't in a camp. Do you give that guy a rematch?
No, you don't.
So are you happy with the fact that Michael Bisping said that out loud, because some people I think have a problem more that Bisping said it than the fact that it was actually going to happen.
The sport should be a meritocracy, and so if you lose on a guy who walked off a movie set with Vin Diesel to beat you up
every time
and take
every
your,
time,
well, because it's the
as if Vin Diesel's there feeding him like donuts and popcorn.
It's like the most ridiculous story you could ever hear in your life. Hanging out with Vin Diesel, 2 weeks later, he wins the... No, you don't get that shot. And so if you're not going to get that shot, take the guy who had the spectacular knockout earlier in the night, which had a spectacular knockout of you at UFC 100, or let's do a super fight. It's not like Bisping's getting any younger.
Mm-mm.
You know, and it's not like guys at 85 are now holding that belt on for a long time, so why not make the fights interesting? There isn't anything interesting for you in seeing Rockhold Bisping 2. There isn't. What is interesting to you about that?
Nothing right now. Not compared to some of the other options, because you've got Bisping Jacare. I think Jacare is due for his title shot. So I think one of those things that people would be upset about if we went to that super fight route, I imagine to be a catchweight with GSP, would be the fact that we'd be in another Conor McGregor situation where you've got guys who want the belt that can't actually fight for the belt. And I think out of all of the divisions, I don't know if there's anybody in any of the divisions, you might be able to point at somebody else. I don't know if there's anybody who deserves their shot now more than Jacare Souza at this point.
Jacare would be the only guy in the actual rankings that I would pick, for sure. But, I mean, if you're going to...
Is there anybody more deserving in any of the divisions at a title shot?
Nope, not at all.
Not at this point?
No.
And, again, if you want to go with Bisping Hendo, too, I can deal with that. Especially, now, this was... I don't know if it was fan art, if it was something he wasn't supposed to release, but essentially it was UFC 204 is what that fight's been rumored for, and that's where Michael Bisping says, I do owe him one. And if you're going to turn it around to 204, I'm fine.
Yep.
That's a five-pay-per-view. That's a five-pay-per-view turnaround. I think that'll be 204 would be August or September even. It's pretty quick. So I don't have any issue with that. That winner obviously would have to take on Jacare. I don't think you keep pushing him to the side. But again, you have to look at this as a business. You have to decide, are we going to try to get another fight out of Dan Henderson? Because if this is the fight... If he's going to fight, this is probably the fight to make. And I know that would upset some people because conceivably you end up with Dan Henderson as your middleweight champion. When you really look at his fights over the past couple of years, would be insane.
It would be, but I think it would make it super interesting. And I would aim for that one if we can't get GSP in that fray.
So would you rather have GSP Bisping than Jacare for the title?
No, I would rather have Jacare. But if we're talking super fights, I would take GSP over Hendo.
You would take GSP over, okay, but that wouldn't be a super fight. It'd be a middleweight fight still. I get what you're saying. Marquee matchup.
Sure, let's do that. I'm just, because he's never fought at 85.
I'm just trying to stay in the vernacular.
Fair enough.
Who's never fought at 85?
GSP?
Right. Oh, I figured they'd be at a catchweight.
I don't know.
That's what a super fight means to me.
We haven't booked it yet.
That's why it's super.
All right. We got to jump and talk to Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. After that, we will break down the card and get you ready for this weekend. It's an interesting time, Ken. They've pushed it back a half hour, which I'm sure makes you happy. It starts at 10:30, not 10 this weekend.
Why are they? What is that?
I don't have any idea.
Is there soccer?
Maybe. I don't know. It's Fox Sports 1.
There's probably soccer.
We'll talk to Stephen Wonderboy Thompson right now. It is Way of the Warrior. It's your MMA show. Stephen, how are you, my friend?
Doing good, brother. How about yourself?
I am fantastic. Big, huge week for you, Rory McDonald, this weekend. First, you know, you've been doing a bunch of interviews, obviously, both today and a couple weeks back. I want to talk really, really quickly about, before we get into what's going to happen this weekend, about your innovation. I heard a really interesting interview with you 2 weeks ago, and you were talking about, you know, what happens in camp and how those things just kind of come naturally to you. And Joe Rogan was tearing apart the fight with Ellenberger when you did the spin kick, when your dad just said spin and you hit that. Can you, you know, kind of explain to people what those fights look from your perspective and when those things arrive? Because I think from a fan perspective, people are mesmerized with your striking. And I would just love to kind of get a sense of where that stuff comes from.
Well, you know, I've been in the martial arts since I was 3 years old, you know, coming up in a karate background, and I still do my karate training every day, Kempo karate. So, you know, coming up and competing in point tournaments a lot, I developed, just a different style and brought that over to kickboxing. And from kickboxing, I switched to mixed martial arts, and it's helped me, you know, like crazy in MMA. Just the switching sides, the kicks that come from different angles, my punches coming from different angles, the distance management. It's a very awkward, very hard style to get used to. and very frustrating for those you know, for those opponents out there who aren't used to that. You know what I mean? And usually when I'm out there and I'm fighting, it's just reaction. There's no thinking. And sometimes your coach may see something outside of the cage and you don't see inside, which happened out there with Jake Ellenberger. You know, my dad knew that he started to slow down and he saw the opportunity for me to actually hit this guy with a spin kick and he just said spin. And as soon as I heard him say that, I knew exactly what to do and I hit him with it not once but twice during that fight.
And so we fast forward to Johnny Hendricks, and you've been talking about how he was not an easy fighter, but certainly an easier person to prepare for because you knew it was going to happen. Fast forward to this weekend, right? If we go back a couple years, Rory McDonald was you a couple years ago. They were talking about how he was the first complete mixed martial artist coming in with, you know, not a wrestler who learned jiu-jitsu or not a jiu-jitsu guy who learned striking. And here we are in 2016, and, you know, you right now are knocking on the door of being the heir apparent to the title shot with Robbie Lawler. Talk to me about what you like about this Rory fight, because as a fan, I cannot wait to see what happens on Saturday night.
Well, what I'm most excited about is, you know, he's a young guy, man, he's always evolving, always getting better, and I'm more excited just to see what he's going to bring to the octagon. Because there's no telling, you know, there's no what kind of new tricks he's got up his sleeve. And that's what excites me the most is going out there and fighting a whole new Rory McDonald from when we saw him fight Robbie Lawler. I know he learned a lot from that fight. And a lot of people are saying he took a lot of damage, but it's been a while since he's fought. And so he's healed up, and I think we're going to see the best Rory McDonald come this weekend. So, you know what? There's no telling what he's going to be bringing. If he's going to keep it standing, is he going to, you know, try and look to take me down right off the bat? I know eventually he's going to want to, but, you know, he's not afraid to go out there and stand and bang, you know?
Right. So, you know, when you look at this fight, are you somebody who is a ring rust believer or are you a non-believer in this? I mean, he's been, like you said, he's been out for a while, so he's fresh, but he also hasn't been as active as you have been.
Yeah, I mean, there can be a lot of ring rust, but I didn't become the fighter I am today if it wasn't for my loss against Matt Brown, and that's how I look at it, you know, just for my psyche, that, you know, I'm going to be facing the best Rory McDonald, so I need to be doing what I can to prepare for the best Rory McDonald. So I'm looking at it as if he's going to be out there, and he's going to be better than he was when he stepped out there with Robbie Lawler.
Stephen Thompson joining us fighting this weekend in Ottawa. They are obviously doing the new weight cut, so you're going to be able to weigh in a little bit earlier. I know you said 2 weeks ago you were at 85, so you felt like you were right on par. Does the early weigh-in, is that an effect for you? Do you not care either way? Do you think it's a good thing for the sport, or does it not matter?
I think it's a great thing for the sport. I mean, you know, early on when I was fighting for the UFC, you know, I was walking around about 195, and just that dramatic cut. I learned actually after the Matt Brown fight, I can't do that. You know, it just affects my body a little bit differently. I know it does with other people. With the new USADA rules, the no IV ban, and with this new rule about having to be 8% of what you're going to be weighing in at, it's going to make people, force people either move weight classes or walk around at a lighter weight. So, you know, for me personally, I've been walking around about 185 since the Johnny Hendricks fight. And I feel great, man. I feel just as strong as I was at 200, but I feel so much faster. And the weight cut's so much easier. That way we're going to see more exciting fights.
And I think that's understating this weekend. It's going to be a super exciting fight between you and Rory McDonald. The winner is the presumed number one contender. If you get out of this thing with a victory, when would you like to fight for the title, if you could pick?
You know, I don't like looking past anybody. But, you know, with a win over Rory McDonald, I would love to fight Robbie Lawler in New York City in November at the Madison Square Garden. That would be awesome. That would be a dream come true right there.
That would be very awesome. Speaking of New York, how is your brother-in-law feeling?
Oh, man, he's feeling great, man. He's right out of surgery. You know, I just talked to him actually on the phone. He'll be here cornering me for this fight this Saturday. So he's back into it, man, in physical therapy now. So it's a whole lot better.
Awesome. Stephen Wonderboy Thompson has been joining us. I know you have 1,000 of these to do, so I'm going to let you go. So excited to see what happens this weekend. UFC Fight Night 89 in Ottawa. Stephen, have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next time, hopefully when you're heading to New York to take that title at the welterweight division.
Sounds Sounds good, my friend. I appreciate you having me on.
All right, there goes Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. Like I said, he will be taking on number one ranked Rory McDonald this weekend on Fox Sports 1. It will take place in Ottawa at a very odd time of 10:30. No idea why they pushed it back a half hour further than they normally do, but apparently that's what they're doing this weekend. I hope they're not doing that as a permanent thing, but this weekend they pushed it back to 10:30. Maybe a soccer thing? Not real sure. Like I said, first time they're in Ottawa, Ontario, and this is going to be a great fight. You've got Rory McDonald coming back from a year layoff, and like I was saying to Stephen Thompson, you know, that can be a blessing or a curse. I think it's a great idea that Rory McDonald had some time off. At the same time, I think one of the things to be concerned about is if Rory wastes any time getting started. If you give Stephen Thompson the patience and the time to set his kicks up and set his punches up and set his angles up and switch stances and all of that stuff, Rory's going to be playing catch-up, which is not the position that he needs to be in. He needs to be the one controlling this fight. And like Stephen was saying, the guy who's going to be initiating the takedowns and trying to work from the ground. That's not to say that this is going to become a submission battle, although Rory would have the slight edge in that universe. He only has one submission in his entire time in the UFC, so I don't look for him to do that right off the bat later in the rounds if he's getting handled in the stand-up. I would certainly see takedown to submission being part of the game plan. This is an interesting fight, and I think if you asked me 6 months from now, if they both end up fighting in New York as opposed to here in Ottawa, and Rory had a fight or two before then, I think my answer would be very different as to what's going to happen. I just think a slow start for Rory McDonald can spell disaster, and Stephen Thompson on a 6-fight win streak, he learned a ton in that Matt Brown fight, and we just don't know what Rory has learned from the Robbie Lawler fight. And let's not take anything away from Rory McDonald. This is a guy who has been on top of the heat for a long, 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 long time, just hasn't been able to turn the corner and pick up that belt. But you're dealing with a guy in Stephen Thompson who just handled Johnny Hendricks. Johnny Hendricks, who went 15 minutes with Robbie Lawler, not one time, sorry, 25 minutes, not one time, but two times, went 25 minutes with George St. Pierre. So went 15 rounds with two of the best welterweights of all time. Stephen Thompson finished that guy in one round. So a slow start for Rory McDonald would spell disaster, and I think that's what's going to happen, which is why I think Stephen Thompson is going to walk away with this one. And hopefully, as he said minutes ago, get that title shot against Robbie Lawler in New York City when they go for the first time at MSG. The co-main event, Donald Cerrone taking on Patrick Cote. Patrick Cote finding his stride at 37 years old, which is fun to say. He's on a 3-fight win streak at welterweight, which is the first time in a long time. He normally fights at 185, has 3 fights at 170, and seems to have found a home there. Donald Cerrone, this is why fans love him. This is why we love talking to him and about him. He's a guy who's just going to fight anyone, any place, anytime. He comes off that Alex Oliveira win that he had in February, and now he's looking to take on Patrick Cote. Look, a win or a loss for Donald Cerrone is weird to say, but it's kind of irrelevant. He's just not a guy that needs wins or losses. He's just a guy who he needs to continue to fight because the fans love to see him fight. Cote, on the other hand, if he beats Donald Cerrone, that's a marquee guy, and now we're beginning to have a conversation about what happens to Patrick Cote in the title picture. Now, it's getting busy towards the top, and it's not like beating Donald Cerrone puts you at the top of that heap, but it certainly gets you in the conversation. And Cote's got a couple of weapons that spell trouble for Donald Cerrone. One, he's got that right hand, that knockout power, and he's going to be bigger than Cerrone and a little bit stronger than Cerrone. And Cerrone, as you know, at 155, has been a guy who's had some trouble starting quickly. And again, just like the main card, if you start slow and you give Patrick Cote the time to get in close and grind you out, this is going to be a bad night for Donald Cerrone. Donald needs space, and he needs to not be backing up. If those two things are happening in his favor, this is his fight to win. If he's being backed up, if he's up against the cage and Cote can get him in the clinch and work from the clinch, that's not going to be a good night for Cerrone, which is what makes this fight so exciting. Number one, because Cerrone is a game guy who's going to be a little bit undersized. Not a little bit. He's going to be a lot undersized against Patrick Cote, but he does not care, which is why we love to see him fight. This could be a very, very fun fight. I hope it's a very, very fun fight, and I would love to see it go at least close to the distance. It doesn't need to go to the full distance, but I would love to see it go close to the distance because I think, watching these two guys go and go and go would be really fun to see how it folds out in a chess match sort of way. If this ends in one round, I think we'll be robbed a little bit because both of these guys have more in them and could be a much more interesting fight if it gets some time to kind of breathe a little bit, like a fine wine. Gets to unfold a little bit and happen. You got Bossy and O'Connell. That's going to be another fun fight as those two guys are certainly going to bang and like to stand in the middle and bang. The interesting fight on the main card, and I want you to pay attention to this even if you're not a super big fan of female MMA. You got Valerie Letourneau taking on Calderwood from Scotland. And what's interesting about the Calderwood-Letourneau fight is, of course, Letourneau was on a big win streak prior to running into Johanna Jędrzejczyk, and then she just had nothing for Jędrzejczyk. So she's got to get back on the winning skids, or the winning stride, I should say. Both Calderwood and Letourneau are fighting at not 115, where they should be. They're at 125. Which is an odd catchweight to me. So I don't know if we're making a new division, if we're testing out a new division, or they wanted to see what these two could do at this new division of 125, but that is what you're going to see here, is Letourneau and Calderwood fighting at 125, a division that doesn't currently exist in the UFC in female MMA. So your dreams of 145 don't seem to be coming to fruition, but 125 might be a thing, and we'll find out after Saturday night if this is indeed a thing. Aubin Mercier taking on Gaudi. That's another great fight. Aubin Mercier, if you saw his last fight, he was winning it pretty much for most of the fight and lost in the end. So he's got to kind of shake that loose and get back to finishing the fight. These are in the UFC. When you get to the UFC, you obviously have to go the entire distance. We've seen far too many fighters this year seem to be winning rounds one, rounds two, and just kind of coast away. I mean, you saw it in the Alex Caceres fight, right? You can be having it go your way. You saw it in the Clay Guida fight. It can be going your way for a minute, and then it's not going your way anymore. So Aubin Mercier certainly needs a victory on Saturday night, and he certainly could do it, although Gauthier, I like him in this fight, and it's just something about it says that he's going to be the one walking away with the win. Okay, a couple other things that I want to talk about before we wrap the show up for this week. One, huge news today. We're still unfolding a little bit, the Fedor news. Nothing official yet, so if that happens over the weekend, you can catch it at WOW Show. But right now, the biggest news is that Will Brooks has signed with the UFC. Will Brooks has signed with the UFC. This is so cool. So not only has he signed with the UFC, but you will not have to wait long to see him in the octagon. As in 3 weeks, he will be taking on Ross Pearson on short notice. This is a fabulous, fabulous fight for the fans and a great way, I think, to spotlight not only what Ross Pearson is great at, but what will be great between these two. This is a great, great fight that I'm super excited about. Big, big stuff. And we were talking a couple weeks ago about Anthony Pettis, and is it over for him? Is it a wrap, right? Because he just hasn't been very successful at 155 since losing the strap. Well, he apparently felt the same way. He dropped a featherweight this week, and he has his debut. It'll be at Fox 21. He's going to take on Charles Oliveira. This is another really, really fun fight. But what happens to Pettis if he has nothing for Oliveira? I have no idea. However, I think this is a fun fight, and I'm excited to see what happens with him at 145. I think it's a fun weight for him. I think it's a busy weight class. And we've said this on the show 1,000 times, 45, 55, and 70, really, really, really busy weight classes. So moving around really has to be in the interest of the fighter, not necessarily in the interest of getting a quicker shot to the title. Although beating Oliveira is getting you in the right direction, it's not a guaranteed thing, especially at 145 where you can't even get the champ to come back and bring the belt. We were talking earlier in the show, what is going to happen with Michael Bisping? Well, it looks like Bisping would love to fight Dan Henderson, and Hendo said he wants his last fight to be Bisping for the title. And I think if Ken were here to talk about it, he would be super fired up about that. Other news, UFC Ultimate Fight Night Utah, it is going to be Cub Swanson and Kawajiri. That is going to be taking place later on this year. And I think that just about wraps up everything that is breaking on a Wednesday evening before we post this up. But I wanted to get it to you early so you could hear the entire show. As always this weekend, if you want to see anything breaking or late breaking or developing, catch us on Twitter and on Facebook by searching WOW Show. It's Way of the Warrior. It's your MMA show.